And then you see you have it. Because now the difference is, and that's a very important difference, that in the Mahayana, this body is an assembly around it. It's part of the universe, which is known as the Buddha field, Buddha Kshetra. And therefore, on these things in Japan, which are just, I mean, ordinary things, they just survived in Japan, you have not only the Buddha Amitabha and his cosmic body, but you have then the congregation all over the place, the so-called Buddha field or Buddha kingdom. So therefore, all Buddhist art is on that subject. And why then, just to ask you a question, why then do they never represent the actual body of the Buddha? I mean, what we would call the natural body, what we have in Mitsu. So simple, that you obviously don't know it.
Because Buddha was a Negro?
Negro. Well, you're an intelligent Negro, that goes. You are either Negro or Mongol, probably a mixture if you need it. Most Buddhists have no experience of Negroes. I mean, it's only since this religion has moved into this part of the world that it has collided with the Negro question. I mean, in Asia, it has never.
Well, originally it was forbidden, wasn't it?
Yes, but why? I mean, there must be some reason in it. I mean, Buddhists are intelligent people. I mean, that is the great advantage of this religion. It's all thought out. It's not just stupid religion.
You don't want to lose the power or have the power wasted.
Nobody knows. No, no, the marks are all supernatural now.
But if it's a natural body, people would attach to it. Natural body.
So you mean you have like Christ becomes then a white man and all the Negroes begins to yowl until we want a black one and the Chicanos want a brown one. And the little Japanese one, the lovely Madonna. No. Well, I mean, this shows you know nothing. The reason given is that the ordinary body is putrid and repulsive. You see, that Buddhism has always taught to withdraw all narcissism from the body. It is again completely against what we are being taught. It says the body is a stinking, filthy thing. To see beauty, I mean, that's why I thought of this already when I brought up Marilyn Monroe. It would be very difficult for Buddhists to be enchanted with Marilyn Monroe in the nude. I mean, the way she has clothes on, it's all right, you can imagine all sorts of things. But some naked bitch, you see, you would at once regard as so putrid and stinking to high heaven. If you have done this, good Buddhists should have done, that you would see no enchantment in it at all. You don't like it, but I mean, that is the truth of the matter. And this is the result, you see, you know, that these are official meditations. And I mean, I have done this, I could not. I mean, I am quite interested in the Gandhis, you see, being French. But I would never regard a woman as beautiful. I mean, the whole idea of a woman as beautiful, I don't think. It becomes second nature to you. I mean, it's just no wonder these American females always deodorize themselves to such an extent that really nothing is left at all in the end. So you see, that is an essential part of Buddhism. That on the one side, you have the theory that physical beauty is a sign of goodness. And an ugly man, and especially a deformed man, must not even become a member of the order. Because he is obviously the curse of heaven visibly rests upon him. Christianity.
But even a beautiful physical body is not sufficiently good enough to portray a Buddha.
No, but I mean, there is not. You have
there
not.
Is not.
There is not. You see, the body is, everybody is filthy, and I mean, it's really filthy. You see, you have all these meditations, look them up in my book. I mean, you start seeing the nine epithets. Now, you see, you've gone with the nine apples here a bit long time. For about 5 hours, you've used the nine apples. There are nine, isn't it? The one girl whom I ringly knock on the campus has 11. Apples yours, because she has two holes in her ears to put rings into it. But still, you're still the other nine. That's one thing. You have. I mean, you see it in America. I mean, your whole purity is, you know, that all people smell. And, you know, in America, I mean, women, I mean, you see what they do here. Do deodorize themselves. I mean, I suppose they do it. Look at me. I don't know if they do it or not. I couldn't get it. But if you look on television, there's a lovely one. So two little girls. And it is that absolutely not a smell is left on the whole flat pitch, you see, because it's all pushed off. So do you see that? There's the smell. There are the happen showers. And generally, I mean, it's most undesirable thing. Don't you see that? From that point of view, you see, you have a definite aversion to the physical body as being filthy. It's an aesthetic objection to it.
It is.
Aesthetic is an objection, and I find it, you see. I mean, this is one way which is so second nature in me that I feel this. I mean, they say, I mean, if we again say, make us suffer, that I would rather touch a rotting corpse with a pole 10 feet wide, 10 feet long, than to touch on her skin and rub her. The rubbing which brings out the heat and the general smell and sweat and things like that. You have that. I mean, it may be distasteful for you, but I mean, you must understand Buddhism as it is lived, you know. You have that in Shakespeare. Shakespeare, he was a Taurus. In Taurus, he loved sex. You see, home, home, home. That's what he loved. It. But when he got a bit older, he saw that his home, home, home led to terrible sweating. I mean, a lovely description of the actual process. So you see, this revulsion against the flesh or whatever it is called is an aesthetic one. It's so in Shakespeare. And so it is in Buddhism. You see, it is a revulsion to the sight and to the smell. And the smell is terrific. I mean, there's a lot of smell in it. Mere thought. Feel uncomfortable. In attitudes. You see, now, therefore, if the Buddha had got that, this does not express his nature in the least. That's why it is forbidden, you see, for 500 years to show him at all in a human form. But then after 500 years under the influence of Greek civilization, he was then shown in an idealized form, which, however, has none of these features. You see, there's the most vague explanations of this, you see. I mean, the smell, which they always have the smell, which you can easily understand in the East. I imagine, I mean, how the Indian females used to stink, and the Indian males, you see, they stink. I mean, that is the main feature which any British imperialist brings back to England, that he describes them as a lot of stinking niggers. I mean, this is the grateful or pleasant way in which they talk about their former subjects. And there's always the stinking stinks, and there must be some smell in it, which I do not extend these British imperialists. But it must be the sort of outstanding thing to have. You know, well, how about it? And then a few machine guns were used to reduce their number. So then I think it's on. So therefore, you see, the body is definitely a filthy accretion which has no beauty whatsoever. You see, any beauty you may have is in the imagination. And I say, you may not, you see, I've done this, you see, I've done awesome for this, and this is clear to me. I mean, if you, yes, I mean, it's usually women, I mean, in our case, it's women, if I think of the next woman, I mean, this woman there in the next, I just say, thank God, we have stories and fears and misfortune to this to my left, and all this will be repeated to mankind in 600 years.
It definitely lasts for 3 years. Could you say then, or is it possible to say that there is some intrinsic statement, some intrinsic, you could say that, that the Buddha is intrinsically beautiful, or that there's some basic aesthetic consideration which underlies all of this?
Yes. I mean, you see the logic behind it. If beauty is a reward for good action, you see, a beautiful woman was a virtuous woman. An ugly woman was an unvirtuous woman. It's a primitive aesthetic, you see. This is a true law. Then the Buddha must have been excessively beautiful. Hmm? But not in his physical body, which was absolutely awful, but in his glorified body. You see, he had, within him, we all have a glorified body, you see. Not, I mean, I have it. You know this in theosophy, you have the aura and all this kind of thing. You see that the body does not exactly stop here at your skin, but there's a bit further on. You can see it if you like. So therefore, you see, it is in the logic, you see, that the Buddha must have a body infinitely more beautiful than anything, but it is not this kind of thing. Because in Buddhism, you see, this is an aesthetic aversion to the body, which is connected with an aversion to sex as the most dangerous rival to meditation. I mean, if we get again back to our little girlie, then any beauty which might be in them is due to our sexual desire. So I caused a riot in, I think, the third class I gave in Berkeley by saying the definition of an instinct is that you are interested in something which is inherently uninteresting. And then tried to explain why the object of the text instinct was inherently uninteresting. And I mean, I couldn't keep it up. I mean, both.
You mentioned later on here the world of non-instinctual objects.
Yes, non-instinctual.
I can quite understand
that. Well, a non-instinctual object is that you have a beauty. You see, that any beauty which is connected with sex at most, also with men, you see, I mean, it's obvious that the amount of latent homosexuality in us is enormous. I mean, I noticed this in Oxford. This is agreed on. You see, this is the one privilege which we have. We can be homosexual and are not prosecuted. It's a privilege. People, well, famous people who sleep with boys all the time. And nobody would dare to touch them. But we are the children of the sun. Now, this is being standardized by having parson's pleasure. Parson's pleasure is where you bathe in the naked completely. Only men are allowed. And I also sometimes went to parson's pleasure. Not really, because I prefer girls any time. But because a friend of mine, a man called Harvey, we were writing a book together, and he insisted on going there with his typewriter. So he was there. And then I saw that I had a tremendous amount of homosexuality in myself, which I never could realize. You see, that you walked along, and there you saw them. You see, some real boys, you know, tiny. Do they allow girls here nowadays? You see, and it was almost exactly like it. But then, I mean, when you went further, when you went to this level, you saw that the borderline between boys and girls is by no means as clear as you imagine, you know. And in fact, when I started to be thinking in it, I found that I'm always only interested in girls who look like boys. Myself, you see, that my libido, only worked. And they are always invariably repressed or suppressed lesbians, I found. So you see, so therefore, if you speak about the beauty of men, the devil is in it too. You have the libido in it, just as you have with the girl. And it's difficult to demonstrate. I was absolutely amazed what I thought about this when I just thought to myself, you see, thank God, I am fixed on these teenagers, because otherwise I would get involved in this. Which has the greatest advantage, at least in the English form, that it causes forms of jealousy, which are so pathological, that I prefer on the whole the heterosexual variety of it. noisy, so therefore now what you have to find is a non-instinctual beauty. And that's a very difficult thing. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, Freudianism and so on is well known, that a lot of sex symbols are smuggled into the book. Some blind things, you see. Now, a non-instinctual object would be pure beauty, which is of no interest to any of your instincts. That is what it meant.
But if in
and for instance, you have it, I mean, among the artists who have it, Blake, I would say, an English artist called Blake, I think he comes very near it. Whereas, of course, most, I mean, a very large part of Western art is just polite pornography for the rich. If you look at it, I mean, the Madonnas and so on. It is quite obvious. These are just little girls in Italy you go to bed with normally. And now you put them there and put a little baby by their little bosoms, you see, and then you come around here. I mean, the non-instinctual ones are the Byzantine ones. But I mean, the Renaissance ones, that's all mere pornography.
Comment, a non-instinctual object would be something which is not
interesting. Something which would not interest any sensible person, in which nobody who has any sense would ever be interested in. That is the test of it.
Something like the transformation body.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, any instinctual person would see, what's that? But there are such things, and the only example at the moment, you see, as I say, I'm unprepared because I don't know what I've got in here, would be Blake. I think he is the nearest I can think of. And there's especially a very beautiful one, which I hope to reproduce in my next book, if I can bully my publisher into it, which is by Blake, drawing of the Cave of the Nymphs, as described by Porphyry, a Neoplatonist. You know, that I would have thought was about the nearest I could think. But, and compared with that, most of Western art is clear pornography. I mean, it's just a titillation. They're just showing enough of the women to make them look attractive. Yeah. So are we making some headway? I mean, have I made myself clear on it?
Yes.
See, I mean, so therefore, this kind of physical aversion to the physical body is of the essence of Buddhism. I mean, I do not doubt for a moment that you may later on invent forms of Buddhism which may change all of this. You see, but I'm only talking about the Buddhism which is known to man, you see. And that is, you see, why the entire Tantra, the whole purpose of it is to transform your body into an ethereal body. And enormous efforts are made there. They have been just fantastic what they have thought of. And produce what they call the Vajra body, the adamantine body.
So it's not to liberate your ordinary body, you
think? I don't think so, no. So no, I know this is
a sort of some unusual understanding of what it is that you use your ordinary sense of desire.
Well, that is the usual understanding in a certain part of the world which is known as the Bay Area of America. And it's only a very small part of the world.
Thank you for that clarification.
I learned a lot about Buddhism here, which I've never heard of before. No.
They have a seminar called Tantra Yoga Sexual Fulfillment Seminar. You can use the ancient teachings of Tantra Buddhists to attain greater sexual satisfaction. They're holding these seminars in Sausalito.
I know it only too well because I was asked to attend. And I don't know as a what.
I paused to let you finish.
But you see, that I mean, quite a lot is known of this. And what is known is, you see, that sexual intercourse in the Tantra means the withholding of the semen. That is a fact. And all I can advise you is to try to do it. My hat, sir. And then you will see that this is a form of escapism. I mean, it just can't be done. There are these jolly things. Yes, what do you think of it? It just can't be done. Well, it can be done. Even, I mean, you wish you didn't. I mean, you may have heard of coitus interruptus, I suppose, that's in practice known here to some extent, too. Now, this is coitus interruptus about multiplied by a million, you see, the effect on the nerves. Terrific. And therefore, any satisfaction which derived from it must be pure imaginary.
This is a technique to develop your larger body?
Yes, sir, too. You see, what you have to do is to overcome your instincts. You see, this became clear. Well, she is chaste. You see, I am not. You see, but Venus in Cancer, chaste. You see, that sex is a sacred thing. As to me, it's a mere joke. You see, so in consequence, I will explain it in my own jocular form. Venus is in Aquarius. Now, the point is to overcome your instincts by denying them in action. Now,
in action as opposed to?
To just in general, the thinking. Now, what you do is, you know, we have section, let's have the yapyum, I think, right? Section which I cross. And you must do it in the yogic position. That's the first thing. I mean, as it's. But this shows that I clearly am a monk, a Mongol, reborn, because when I was a young man, I tried instinctively to do this without ever having read any books about it. So I assumed this was my yogic practice. Now, once you get over this, in addition, now you must keep your semen. Semen is an American word, I hope. Now, this is total madness. Because, you see, I mean, you. Now, the woman, now you must have the poor girl, you see, who is known not as Shakti, but a Prajna, a little wisdom, you see, she must be small, because otherwise she just fall off, you see, I mean, it's perfectly off. You look at you, you must have little Shakti, and you will find that on the pictures, they're always little ones, you see. And so I took one, the little Jews, you see, that's why I know everything about Jews. You see, little Jew. Now, then, however, you find that you have not reckoned with the fact of life. Because you are stuck now in this woman. I mean, I must bring at least so much physical fact. You are stuck in this woman. Now, you say to yourself, be a good boy, keep these blasted sperms in. But she, you see, thinks how wonderful it is. And she has got a thing which all the time goes like this, you see, which is known as a vulva. She's pushing it. If you all hit her, keep still, you see. We want to do this here. She is driven mad, you see, because her entire organ is built to go like this, isn't it? To get these blossom stumps out of you. I mean, if they hadn't done that, I mean, we wouldn't be here or there. So that's in her, you see. So she all the time is pulling her head. And now, then, if you now survive that, and she survives, it is all getting into a state of total hysteria. Then you have overcome your attachment to sex and your inaction. And the amount of fun involved, I mean, there's nil. I mean, you see, celibacy, I mean, it's very much more convenient. And this, of course, is terribly funny, because in America, of course, the girls, women here, they have the imagine, you see, that they are equal in all these kind of things. And so they dislike. And so one of these little girlies came to me, a Chinese girl, and wanted to write on women in Buddhism. And then, now, that they had always a very bad name there, you see, because they stir up these passions, and their filthy bodies, you see, all the time distract us. But then, do you not think, Professor Hunter, that the tantra, the position of women, were immensely increased by them allowed to become consorts and shaktis of them. And I just looked at them and thought, now are you one of these little coeds who come along to pull my leg? If you had the remotest idea how your position would be improved if you were stuck onto a man in the yogic position and were allowed to keep still and not pull at him. you would think differently. But she was a kind of Chinese. We had our eyes like lizards. I wonder, does she poke fun at me or not? I do not know whether she pokes fun at me, but in her paper later on, a whole page was written about the glorification of women. They're being allowed to be labored by these unions. So, I mean, do you follow me? I don't know whether you follow it or not. You see, the whole point is, I mean, if you know anything about saying, is to get rid of the blasted stars. It's men. I mean, I would have not surrounded them. I removed memory of the matter. And in fact, the interesting thing is that it appears to you, when you do this, I don't know whether anybody of you is allowed to know of it, is that it is really a terribly urgent matter to get rid of. It's found that, I mean, you get really involved in this matter. At least I do. Or did. Do you know that? But here, you have to completely deny it. And therefore, you see, the people who do it say that the pain is almost unbearable. You see, it's still being done. I mean, we don't know what it's yet. But it is still being done that there are many yogis in India who do it. You see, the Shivaite. And a friend of mine, whom I met, he lived with them. And they always have to laugh at the best of barbarians, think that this is a form of going to a brothel. That in fact is the exact opposite, you see. It is just destroying your instinct by torturing it almost beyond endurance. And don't you see that? I mean, I've got so many notions of it. Especially the poor little girlies, you see. Because, I mean, they must be small, and they must be young, too. Because really, these old heads are no good for it. So you're quite so young, some little chick, they are 16 or 17, and say, come on, still, yeah. They at last begin to feel, boom, boom, we are entering into the meaning of life. So I'm driven off the head. I mean, we follow this. This is, I mean, without any doubt, I mean, this is absolutely, I mean, 100% certain what I tell you. That this is in all the books about him. And in fact, I found in Seattle a book recently published in India, which gives all the quotations, but only in Sanskrit. So do you follow that? You see, that this is a denial of your instinct. It is not that you use your natural body, but you transform your body. You see, because the theory is that now these, well, I mean, it's not physiological, you see, that these seeds which come down on those, some similar passage, or as you can look up, you see. Now, these poor seeds, they have a very grim outlook. They stay where they are. And, I mean, you should know this, of course. I don't, you see, I'm not an American. I don't know your background, you see. But when we were kids, we always used to hug with the girls, and we're not allowed to do anything at the time because there was no pill. And so, in consequence, we got worked up like anything, and they got worked like anything. And I remember what a ghastly pain you always got along here from being unable to get rid of these blasted sperms. Now, the theory now in the yoga is that if you now have them, you reabsorb them, and then you open new invisible channels of nervous energy in you, and in due course, a new body, which is known as the Vajra body, which has quite different vessels and all this kind of thing, replaces the other one. That is, you follow that? But it is only possible by blocking the seminal. I mean, not allowing these blasts. I mean, I don't know where they come from. You know, they come down, you see, they are the seminal, what not. And, now, the whole idea is, you see, they explain that in great detail. They knew all that, you see, that you keep them up there, and then this causes the opening up of other. That is to say, the replacement of the natural body by the denial of your instinct. And I must say, I mean, if you just think of it, or you just try it out, I mean, just try it out, you see, you can't do it, in fact. It's almost impossible. I mean, this friend of mine, he tried it, and he said he never met it. I mean, he was an Englishman, and he tried it. I mean, there are plenty of little girls about in these communities, I mean, one more, one less. And he said he never met it.
You mentioned that that it's a Shivaite practice also, so it's not restricted to Buddhism. There's other...
No.
So in what sense...
That tended to answer. Yeah. Well, in what sense?
In what sense does it relate to Buddhism particularly?
No, I didn't relate it at all. It is you who brought it up. I said nothing about extraordinary. It was you who said, somebody of you said, that people said that it is the purpose of the Tantra to live out the instincts of the natural body, isn't it? And then I said that it is untrue. Because it means not to tip them out, but to exasperate them beyond endurance. That is practice. Don't you see that? And that is a fact. Now, you see, the Shivaites now had obviously the same aversion to the body, which the Buddhists had. See, but that's a long story. I mean, it doesn't matter why. But they have survived in India, and they are still very strong in Bengal and so on. And that they exist is shown by a friend of mine who is now a professor somewhere, who lived for a whole year with them, and who also tried this seminal business there. And he said it drove everybody completely mad, and he never could do it. I mean, put it so politely, there was always some, you see, now this big thing that happened.